Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon with you until 3 o'clock today. And we were talking today, you might have heard Donal Gallagher there on the news at 1 talking to Gavin. He is putting his brother Rory's famous Fender Strat up for sale. It is expected to fetch up to between 700,000 and £1 million or euros. And it is part of, it's the lead item in the collection of Rory Gallagher to be auctioned at Bonhams in October in London. Eamon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on, Katie.
You're a huge Rory Gallagher fan, Eamon.
I am, like many millions of people.
And what did you make of this news that the famous Fender Strat was going up for sale?
I was saddened and surprised, you know. But I missed Donald's interview, but I can understand his decision. And he's been a fantastic custodian of Rory's legacy. And he's explained in his own statement the reasons why. And with a heavy heart. But I wonder, has he explored all the options?
What?
And whether we could retain the collection for the state. I think they need to come home.
Yeah, I mean, he was saying that it's currently spends most of his time in a bank vault, which is really doing no good to anybody,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, it's £1 million though. Can we justify spending €1 million of taxpayers' money?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Sure, there's lots of money. We've loads of money. You know, and we can waste it on lots of other things. This is far more important, you know.
Talk to me about when you became a fan of Rory's and, you know, how far back that goes.
Just growing up, my brother was a huge fan. Well, unfortunately, I never got to see Rory live, which is one of my great regrets. I was a bit too young, but I grew up listening to his albums. My brother was a huge fan. He travelled to Listunvarna on a couple of occasions to see him. Back in the day when, Rory would attract huge crowds to open-air festivals.
He was the most, I never saw him myself either, but I've seen plenty of clips of him playing or videos of his live concert. Yeah, he was an incredible live performer.
Oh, yeah. One of the greatest, one of the greatest guitarists of all time. He was the guitarist, just to put it that way. You know, huge influence on every great guitarist, you know.
Yeah, I think all the
Brian May has been quoted several times as saying it's getting Rory's sound influenced his own sound.
Yeah, and Eric Clapton as well has
Clapton. Yeah, I mean they were blown away
Johnny
by
Marr,
like Jimi Hendrix. You know, he was the equivalent of Jimi Hendrix. He was our Jimi Hendrix in a way.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot less flamboyant. off stage, you know. He's a secular saint, you know.
Yeah.
These are secular relics, you know, particularly the Stratocaster.
Yeah, because
that's infused with Rory's. That's infused with his DNA.
I think
his blood, his sweat, his tears, you know.
That, for people who are not fans, for them to understand the relationship between fans and Rory, and then between Rory and that Fender Strat, because that was the guitar he played from when he was 14 years of age.
Yeah, he saw it in the window of Crowley's music shop.
Yeah.
I think it was on McCurtain Street. I'm not sure if it was on McCurtain Street in 1963, but that's where he saw it. He just couldn't believe it. This is like something that arrived from outer space, you know. They would have seen, you know, like Buddy Holly playing on the front of album covers with a Stratocaster. But it was very difficult to get your hands on one in Europe. And according to legend, that this Rory Stratocaster was the very first one to be imported. It was imported by Jim Conlon. He was one of the founders of the Royal Show Band. He imported the guitar, and the story goes that it was the wrong colour. So he kept it for a year. He ordered another one from the States and kept this one for a year, and then pawned it to sold it to Crowley's.
And that's where Rory
and
they, I know
and
where
they put it in the shop window.
And I'm hoping to talk to somebody from Crowley's shortly, actually, just to get the full story there. I think Crowley's has now moved to number 1 Friar Street, I believe.
All right. Okay.
Will you hang on, Eamon? And I want to bring in Tim Crowley, a different Crowley indeed. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, you're not the Crowley Music Shop Crowleys.
No. They say if you throw a stone in Tipperary, you'll hit a Ryan. If you threw one in Cork, you'd hit a Crowley. There's a lot of them.
I'll remember that.
Listen, you run the Michael Collins Centre Museum in Castleview. That's there near Clonakilty.
That's correct, yeah. Mm. So I have a big interest in artefacts and all of that. And I think this guitar, in years to come, would be looked in a similar vein to the Arda chalice or the Book of Kells or something like that.
Exactly.
It's such an iconic artefact as far as modern Irish history and culture is concerned.
Yeah. It's a national treasure.
It is. Yeah.
Well, that's a big statement now, though, Tim. The Book of Kells and the Arda chalice and Rory Gallagher's Scott.
It's a secular relic.
Yes, it's a different type of relic or artifact. But in years to come, Rory was such an iconic influence on our modern culture. You could say he's the start of all the great musicians we have, the Tin Lizzy and all of that. It's such a special artifact, that instrument.
Yeah. And it has the power to heal, like the great relics in our national collections. They had the power to heal. And Rory's music had the power to heal. It would have healed. It would have given people comfort.
Yeah, well, in Rory's hands, I suppose, we'll have to say, because not many people will get the sound out of it that Rory
man.
Did.
Rory was a devout man. I think he would have enjoyed the comparison, you know.
You could imagine the monks, they were artists, so skilled at painting the scenes in the Book of Kells and so on. Rory Gallagher was equally talented, but in another field.
Exactly,
just a complete
exactly.
genius. And this guitar, I just hope it's not going to leave Ireland in the end, because
funny enough, he was very monk-like in a way. He lived for the stage, off stage. He was a very private man, very quiet. He lived for music, he lived for the stage. It was just part of his being, you know. So in a way, I'm making those, you know, comparisons with our great religious relics, but in a way, there's a lot of parallels.
Yeah, I'm sure he is a saint in a way. Tim, a particular Cork people and Rory Gallagher have a particular affinity, right?
That's right. Well, I suppose what I would be suggesting.
Even though, he was of course born in Donegal. He's originally from Donegal.
Born in Donegal, in the Rock Hospital in Ballyshannon.
Yeah.
and he rests in Cork. He rests in the cemetery down near Ballincollig. So, what would be fantastic is if we'd say Cork City Council could come together with Donegal County Council and buy this guitar and then pass it between the museums and the respective areas.
Well, it's
give everyone a turn to see it. It'd be fantastic.
Great idea. Yeah, its home is Cork, though. It's home. The Stratocaster's home is Cork. I mean, it'd be nice to get the entire collection. I think the state should. You know, in my opinion, we should put a protection order on it, like we put in the National Monument or a great national treasure. It should have a protection order. I think it should be brought back to Cork.
Would you hang on, Tim and Eamon? I want to bring in Des. Des, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. Lovely to talk to you. And I suppose we all thought this day might eventually come. But I support what's been said there. The state should acquire this collection. And indeed, there should be an order to protect it. It's a unique collection. If I heard there about the car being sold as well, this is the car Rory used to drive Muddy Waters to when he was recording his London record.
Interesting.
And I saw Rory many times and met him once. And I've of course seen many rock bands from U2 to whoever you want to name. And Rory was the exception. There really was nobody quite like him. He had an ability which I think places him as the best guitarist of the rock blues era. Nobody could equal his range, not Eric Clapton, not Jimmy Page. In fact, there is a reader's poll from 1973 that places him ahead of all these other legendary guitar players. Rory was, people today wouldn't really understand, but if before Ticketmaster, if you were going to see Rory in the National Stadium, there would be thousands of people queuing down the street to see him. He sold about 30 million records, which at a time before social media, it was extraordinary. He was an absolute legend. Internationally, the world over, well known. And I think it's very important that the state acquires this entire collection.
Des, who, because you go back a long way as a fan, who would Rory Gallagher have cited as his influences then? Because as you say, he's been cited by so many of the iconic names as their influence.
I was actually watching somebody who was feeling he had a voice at times between Elvis and Janis Joplin and Joe Cocker. His influences would have been back to Elvis and the old blues men, Muddy Waters. He played with Jerry Lee Lewis. He met and played with many of the great icons, but he was an aficionado of the great blues greats and covered many of their songs and brought them to a whole new generation. And we're very lucky. There is so much of his work was filmed and recorded, particularly by the BBC, that we have a huge archive. And if you look on YouTube, you'll see the huge numbers of people are amazed when they see Rory, and the viewing for his videos are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands. So it's he is an exception in our modern cultural history. And we preserve Georgian buildings, quite rightly. We preserve many important facets of what makes us who we are. And there is no... Rory was the first Irishman to be internationally famous in popular culture. You know, Jimi Hendrix went to see him at the Marquee. You know, most people would view him as absolutely at that level in the late 60s, early 70s. His band were the outstanding rock band of the era. And
Des, when did you meet him? You said you met him once.
I met him in RTE, of all places. He came in, Dave Heffernan had a rock programme. I think it was called TX around 1980. And when news filtered out that Rory might be a guest, there was great excitement. And of course, it was kept as very, very quiet. But Rory was an extraordinary guy because he wasn't interested in being famous. He refused fame. He didn't want, you know, to be captured by the music industry. He wanted to be his own free spirit. He was a Celtic free spirit in that sense. He was like an Irish traditional band in a pub, just freely paying whatever they want. He never wanted to be caught, as we see so many of our big pop stars today, on trapped into a business model. He was always his own free spirit. And he was so kind. He had a magnetic personality. I think anybody who met him would say this. It was, dare I say, he almost had a spirituality of goodness, of being humble. There was something about him that was very, very surprising when you met him.
Yeah, I have heard many, many times that he was very, very special. A very, very special man. Exactly as you're saying there, to meet him, it was very surprising, his demeanour.
If I can say one last thing, you know, how many rock stars, given that it's the devil's music, at his funeral, I think there was 12 concelebrants, including 3 bishops. That was a mark of, there's nobody gets that sort of respect and treated like that. That is how he was viewed. You know, when people were shocked when he died 30 years ago, he should really still be alive today, for MRSA, which was so unfortunate that's what took him, a hospital bug.
Okay, Dennis, thanks for that. I want to bring in Dennis. Dennis McLean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate. How are you?
Yeah, Dennis, you used to write a bit yourself. Back in the day?
I did indeed. Yeah.
You saw Rory play this Fender Strat?
Yeah, well, I presume it was that. But it was when I was a teenager in Tremore in the 70s. I can't remember whether it was the Silver Slipper or the Atlantic Ballroom, but it was certainly a great sense of occasion when he came to Tremore, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone wanted to be there. He was just somebody very special to teenagers of that era, you know. We'd never had anybody like him on stage before. I mean, he was a homegrown star, you know.
Yeah, I think it's hard even to get our heads around now what a superstar he was, and how out of kilter that was with our thinking of ourselves back in the 70s, you know, because we're post U2 now, we're post, you know, thinking we're great on the world stage. But back in the 1970s, that's not how we looked at ourselves.
Absolutely not. I mean, it might be a bit of an exaggeration to say that he dragged us out of a post-independence intellectual recession. But I certainly think a lot of teenagers in the 70s would have felt that, you know. I mean, you just have to read John McGahern's memoir to see how dull and spiritually dead a lot of Irish life was, you know, until people like Rory Gallagher came along. Of course, we owe a lot to our great writers and painters, etc. as well, but Rory was unique in the way he burst onto the music scene and connected with the young people of Ireland in a way that nobody else had done before, you know.
You see, I do think we do. We revere our poets, you know, rightly so, obviously, like the Seamus Heaneys and Yeats and all of that. But have we really given enough credit to the likes of Rory and what the impact they had on the nation at a very crucial time?
Yeah, absolutely, Casey. You know, he instilled a pride in the youth of this country that was sadly lacking at the time, you know. I mean, He really embodied a new, fresh spirit in Irish life. And I think he inspired, the bands that came after him, you know. That couldn't have happened without a Rory Gallagher, you know, and all the kids who went to see Rory and then who went home and started to learn how to play the guitar themselves, you know, and go on and do their own thing, you know. That's why I think it's no exaggeration, really, to say that this guitar is as meaningful as the Book of Kells or any other great icon of Irish life, and it should be preserved, and the government should feel no shame about buying this instrument and making sure it's preserved, not just for the sake of the instrument itself, but for what it means and the connection we all have with Rory, who left us far too young, you know. And it's as much to honour him as anything else that we should try and hold on to it, you know.
Yeah, I wonder, are they hearing this? And I wonder actually if there was any attempt made in the past to acquire any of this you know, any of Rory Gallagher's memorabilia, particularly this guitar, because, as you say, it's a whole generation, you know, multiple generations, you know, look at that, look back at Rory Gallagher as an extraordinary Irishman of his time.
Casey, can you imagine the French allowing something like this to go to foreign hands? You know, you can't. The prestige and importance that the French people attach to their artists, you know, I mean, you can't imagine, you know, say Serge Gainsbourg's piano being sold off to the highest bidder and allowed to leave France, you know. And I think we should look on Rory's guitar in the same light, you know. It's something that we should hold on to and we should treasure and preserve. I mean, there's a great story to be told around it. If it was a key exhibit in the National Museum, along with other memorabilia associated with Rory and the influence he's had on the development of a very important stream in Irish life and Irish culture.
I know that Donald Gallagher says he wants the guitar to be used and enjoyed and not, you know, left sitting in a vault or perhaps even in a museum. So maybe selling it to somebody might actually put it into the hands of somebody who could get music out of it again.
Yeah, but you're never going to get another Rory Gallagher to play that instrument, you know. I mean, maybe you could have it on exhibition in the National Museum and then, you know, young kids could be invited to come and along and play it if it's in a fit state to be played, you know. But I mean, it definitely should. We can use our imagination, a bit of innovation, to maximise its value to the nation if the Irish taxpayer stumps up the cash to pay for it.
Okay. Well, I've just been handed, hot off the presses, a statement from the Department of Tourism, Culture, Arts, Gaeltacht, Sports and Media, the longest department name in history. They are telling us that the care and development of the national collections are matters in the first instance of the national cultural institutions. The availability of heritage items and any opportunities arising in the market for acquisitions are monitored on a continuing basis, they say. They say it's appreciated when possibilities in this regard are brought to attention by individuals or groups. But it would be inappropriate, they say, to indicate any official consideration or disposition that could impact on the sale value or outcome. So they're basically saying, would you shut up about it in case we want to buy it? I think that's what I'm taking from that. So that's not a no. And I suppose, of course, were they to express an interest and publicly state that now, it would probably drive the price through the roof.
That's true. Yeah, perhaps they could make a private approach to Rory's family and see if anything can be done in that regard. You know, I mean, I would even be in favour of starting a GoFundMe page, you know, so that fans of Rory could put up some cash towards the actual purchase, you know, if the government was willing to match whatever was raised from people who feel strongly about it.
Yeah, you've got to think there's enough fans out there that if everyone just threw in a tenner, that you could you wouldn't be long getting quite the sum of money together on a GoFundMe. Will you hang on, Dennis? Because I want to go back to where it all began. Do I have Sheena on the line?
You do? Hi, Katie.
Oh,
how are you doing?
Sheena. Sheena Crowley. Lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you too. How's it going?
Great. You were mentioned there by Eamon at the top of the programme, and I know this is the origin story of this guitar. So tell me about it. It was your dad's shop in McCurtain Street.
It was in Merchants Quay, actually. My grandfather passed away, and then my dad took over. So it was in 1961 that the Strat was ordered by Jim Conlon from the Royal Show Band, and it didn't match the colour of their outfits that they wore on stage. They had a red suit, you know. So he was disappointed in that. So he asked him to get the red one instead of this. Oh, sorry, the Sunburst one arrived instead of the red one. So he had to get another guitar. So that was traded back in. And that's why it became available for Rory secondhand.
So that guitar started out as a problematic misadventure, basically. The guitar came in the wrong colour. And it's the Royal Show Band. That was Brendan Byers' band, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But there, well, I'm not sure. It was Jim Conlon was the guitarist for them anyway for a period, but I don't know how, if all the way through, like, you know, so it could have been, yeah.
Anyway, so it wasn't wanted. It was the wrong colour. It was traded back to the shop and it was put in the window.
Yeah.
And along comes...
When you think about it, he traded it back in and it became the most famous guitar in the whole world. Yeah. Yeah. But young Rory then saw it in the window.
Yeah, yeah. And he was only 14 at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't afford a Fender at that age of his life, presumably.
Yeah. He had to call his mother to in on it, like I was saying. They arranged to pay off a certain figure every week. And I think he had the guitar after a period of time before it was actually fully paid off. But that would have been common back then, you know. My dad often gave out instruments to people before their bills were paid anyway, you know, so...
Yeah, I think I was listening to Donald there saying that it was actually hidden under the bed first because they couldn't really tell their mother the cost of it and what.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
£100 back in the,
yeah,
that day.
£100, yeah.
That was a lot of money, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
We're talking in the 1960s. My God, like that was a very serious sum of money. But apparently Rory Gallagher saw it and had to have it.
Yep. Yeah, it's amazing. Like the story, listening to all the people talking there, I mean, I agree with every single thing they're saying. And that guitar, like, was part of Rory and he grew into it and that grew into him, you know. So, like, it's to me, it would be the coolest national treasure ever possible. And I think it is as important as all the rest of our national treasure, you know. So, like, if you're not a guitarist and you're not a Gallagher fan, you may have no idea of how far out this reaches. You know, we'd have people coming to us still in our new shop in Fire Street. They might be from Japan, they could be from Iceland, and they're talking about Rory Gallagher, you know. They can be from anywhere, from all around the world. He had a massive reach, and his manner, his way, everything was so lovely and so beautiful that he was dear to people so easily, you know.
Yeah, that's
an incredible guy.
That's the universal review of him as a person as well as a musician, and it's part of your family history as well. Then, of course, because you had this is where that magic guitar came from.
Yeah. So there's always an association there. Like a guy visited the other day from Scotland and he was gigging somewhere and then somebody said, Sheena's dad sold Rory Gallagher the Strat, and he immediately goes, what, you know, and gets excited. Like, so there's always the association. Yeah. So I know when the family decide to let go of Rory's instruments and the Strat and so on, it would have been very, very tough to come to that point. But I totally get what he means too about it sitting in a vault. And it's a hard thing, like, you know, you're responsible for something very, very precious. But instruments want to be played too, so I understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, and of course there's the other issue of insurance. Like, how do you insure something that's priceless, basically?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, like, I remember hearing about a violin that sold for 17 million and I think it was a quarter of a million to insure it every year. Now, I don't know what currently the situation is. So I was trying to find out from Donal, actually, but it's like the maintenance of it, the security of it, the insurance, etc. But I still think, like putting our heads together, you'll find something. There will be a solution for sure.
Yeah, and it should be. It should be a national. It is a national treasure, and it should be. It should be treated as such.
I think it should be in Cork, though. I really do believe that because that it was one of the first Strats brought into Ireland, and my dad got it in for somebody else, but it then became Rory's and it was played here like first. And I definitely think it should come back.
Because I don't know who was saying this earlier to us, was it Dan earlier on saying that is the story goes that it was the first Strat imported into the country or even into Europe? Yeah. Like, what was it? What could it be that?
Well, into Ireland, I would say. Yeah. It would have been in the UK, there would have been plenty, but by that point, not plenty, relatively, there would be a lot more. Yeah. But it was the first in Ireland, yeah. Because my father was constantly trying to source instruments, etc. Because at that point, we were very much in the Cale era still, and then it was going to rock and roll, which was frowned upon. And he was bringing in electric guitars, but it was only Burns at that point. And that was the first Strat then that came in.
And yeah, was there issues about him kind of promoting the kind of music that wasn't particularly appreciated at the time?
Well, you still had a very Catholic Ireland, you know, who would have objected and frowned on the rock and roll kind of thing. And yeah, there was definitely, even very much so in schools and things like that, whereas today it's obviously a whole different story. But he would have been out on his own at that point, you know. So yeah, they were looking down on rock and roll. Yeah,
I'm thinking as well, even from your father's position, like bringing in a guitar worth that amount of money and then not being able to offload it to the person who ordered it would have been a bit of a business hit for him at the time.
Yeah, I suppose he was only 14 when he took over the running of the shop, and he was working with the musicians always. So he had a very good relationship with them, and he would always be trying to facilitate what they needed, you know. So he was very malleable in that way, like, and he never thought about like business hits, you know. He said, okay, he's disappointed in this, I have to get him something, whatever. And then, you know, the kind of good intentions kind of worked out okay for him, you know. Like, it would be made up in another way, you know, so he handled it.
Wow, and he took over the shop age 14 only.
Yeah, well, his dad had set it up originally in 1933. He was a pipe maker, and then he passed away in 1951, and my father was only 10 and a half, and he was going to school in Ortmann, actually, where Rory went as well, but he kept running into the shop and going on the lang, as we say in Cork. And eventually my grandmother gave up and just left him finish school. So he was running it fully at 14. Like, he was in this behind the counter in short pants for a period. And then eventually he's like running the place. And all those customers became like, they were like his peers or whatever. So he was willing to always kind of support them in any way possible, you know. So,
God, it's a great story. That's a great story.
And he was friends with Rory. Rory was 5 years older, manner and character, and they were lovely, like, you know, and they would chat, like, and Rory didn't like any fuss. My dad didn't like any fuss, but particularly for Rory, you know, can you imagine at that point? Like, so he used to come into the shop in the evening when we closed, so he'd ring up and say, is your dad there? And I'd say, yeah. And he'd go, I'd be in afterwards. So we'd wait then for him to come in when everybody's gone, because otherwise he'd get flocked. But then they'd sit there for hours talking about gear, and I'd be sitting in a corner kind of going, when am I going home? You know.
Without, you didn't realise you were in the presence of that level of greatness.
Oh yeah, greatness, absolute greatness. I mean, I knew he was great, but I didn't get it at all. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. He was amazing. Like, even in his way to me, like as a kid, you know, he was absolutely lovely. But I used to see him playing guitar and I'd kind of go, he's unreal. But I didn't know. I didn't understand it. Yeah.
Sheena, thanks for that. Hang on there. I need to take a break, but someone, I'm told, wants to throw a spanner in the works about this guitar.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Can I bring in Margaret now? Margaret, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. Lovely to speak to you.
Yeah, Margaret, you don't agree that we should be spending taxpayers' money on this guitar?
No, Katie, I'm from Cork, and Rory was a very, very humble man, Rory Gallagher. And I thought, if at all possible, that the family should gift it, the guitar, Rory's guitar, to the Cork people, and that it could be put on display in the School of Music where everybody could go and see it. And if that wasn't the way, Katie, we could do with a J.P. McManus.
Somebody to put their hand in their pocket for us.
If we had a Cork J.P. McManus that might buy the guitar and put it into the School of Music, brilliant.
Now, this might sound like it's going against the general run of play here, but we have had other texts in saying, you know, the state spending £1 million on a guitar, no matter how iconic, would be madness.
Definitely.
But Margaret, I mean, it's a lot to ask somebody to give it, to gift this this relic, this precious relic, which is worth, as we were told, a million euro, maybe more.
It is, but no doubt, like, the family should be compensated in some way. But it would be very sad, Katie, if somebody bought the guitar and just bought it for their own use. Do you understand? Like, we say a footballer, and they bought the guitar and just locked it up, put it on his wall, where nobody would see it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking here at Donal Gallagher's statement. They say that it was a challenging decision, you know, and he recognised that it would be challenging for some to put this on the market. But he said the proceeds raised from this instrument sale will continue to do further good for Rory's name and legacy, as well as assisting good causes that my brother would have supported. So, I mean, I know Donal Gallagher has been, you know, widely praised for how he has managed Donal's legacy over the years. And I like, they're putting out live albums year on year now from, you know, from to keep that legacy alive. So, you know,
See, there's two, like I said, I just said to you, like I was listening to the live hour a while ago about a GoFundMe page. Now, you know, people are, a lot of people are stretched for their collar. Could you go to somebody that would, you know, set up a GoFundMe page and pay money for a guitar, if you know what I'm trying to say, when they'd have something else to do with our money?
Oh, well, I mean, if you're a big fan, I'm sure you could throw a tenner into a GoFundMe page. You know, wouldn't...
But we want an awful lot of tenors, Katie.
I know, but I think there's an awful lot of Rory Gallagher fans out there, Margaret.
Oh, there is. Especially in what we call him, his native Cork. There is. People love Rory Gallagher. I mean, we know he was born in Donegal, but he really is, like, he's a Corkman no matter what way you look at it.
I know, and Cork people are always telling me how Cork Rory Gallagher is, Margaret, any time it comes up. But anyway, you don't think it's an appropriate use for taxpayers' money?
No, I don't. I think we have a lot more problems and that money could be used for something else, even though there's an awful lot of it wasted.
That's for sure.
You know, they waste an awful lot of money. But like, as we say, I think the GoFundMe page is a good thing.
Okay. So that's a good
thing. About that now, if the people of Cork came together, and as you said, even a five or a tenner, and we make up the money and put it into the Cork School of Music so that everybody could come and see it.
You're very adamant that it doesn't leave Cork, Margaret.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it stays in Cork where Rory is. It stays there.
Margaret, thanks for that.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks, Margaret. John Norris. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kate.
You toured with Rory Gallagher.
Yeah, I was a stage technician in the early 90s, before Rory passed away a few years before that. And worked in Europe for a few weeks with him. And never forget it. Very proud to be able to say that I, you know, drove him, did his lights for him, heard him play every night. And, it's a time I'll never forget. And he is, without a doubt, one of the greatest guitarists that ever played. And we should be very proud that this country spawned such a guitar player. And I understand people's sentiments about, you know, whether it should stay in the country or whether it should be sold to someone to play. And I think it's ultimately Donal's decision. People forget that Donal spent his entire life looking after Rory and looking after the legacy and ever since. And really, it is his decision. The state, if they want to buy it, should step up and do that. But ultimately, it'll be whoever comes up, steps up to the plate and buys it. Like someone like Joe Bonamassa, for example, who's already played it live, could breathe life into that guitar again and play it. You know, it's meant to be played. It's a guitar, not a monument.
I mean, that's the question, because we've a lot of talk about putting it into a museum. But, that's not what guitars were made for, obviously.
I understand having something like that be, it's an iconic instrument. And like Fender have also replicated it and people buy it. You know, it's not a cheap instrument. Even the replica is not a cheap instrument, the Rory Gallagher replica Strat. I understand that. I understand having the Strat be in Ireland and be there for all to view. But really, ultimately, it is Donal's decision. It's the family's decision.
Yeah, and it is important to say that because, as you say, Donal minded him. He was his manager, obviously, all through his career. But since his death, Donal has been there managing, you know, his affairs and his legacy so well for all those decades.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, Donal was a very young man, younger than Rory, when Rory hit it big. You know, he was on tour with Blind Faith in the late 60s, and Donal was right there every step of the way, you know, as a young kid to write to now. He's been dedicating his life to Rory. So I think his voice should be the one people should be listening to. And if the state wants to step up and buy it, well and good, you know, but ultimately it's his decision.
Tell me, go back to your time in that tour, European tour. What was it actually like being on, you know, in the entourage with Rory Gallagher?
It was great fun. Rory never had a set list. You never knew what the next song was going to be. So as a lighting man, you really had to be on your toes at all times. You know, there was one gig I remember in the Bataclan in Paris where Rory played, and he blew an amp up, and he blew his amp up. And with that, the entire PA shut down. So there was no sound, only lights. So the whole crowd shut up. There wasn't a whisper in the place. Rory took out his acoustic guitar and played just as if he was playing on the street. And there wasn't a sound except for one poor unfortunate person who had gone to the bathroom in the middle of the song before, came out of it. And of course, those squeaky bathroom doors, you know, the door made a sound and the whole crowd turned around and stared at this one guy. I never forget it. But he held that audience in thrall, you know, all through that time where the guys were trying to fix the PA without any amplification. And he was just a mesmerizing performer. And like, he's the kind of guy, very humble, but came to life on stage. Like, I used to drive him sometimes. Everyone on the crew had one and a half jobs or two jobs. And one of mine was driving. If they were short on people, I would drive Donal and Rory and maybe one of the band. And in this instance, the band were ahead of us and Donal had some business to do in the next city. So I was driving Rory, just me and Rory in the car. And Rory hated leaving too early for gigs. So invariably you'd be sitting around in the afternoon wondering, you know, are we going to get enough time to get to the next gig? And eventually we got going and we were going to be late. And I'll never forget pulling into the gig with Rory, and he always travelled with the Strat. The Strat was always in the boot. He never had it on the truck or anything. He always travelled with that Strat and the practice amp because he'd practice in the nighttime, you know, in the hotel. But when we pulled into the gig, the promoter was hanging out the backstage door.
Sweating.
Red-faced and so nervous he thought he was going to have to cancel the gig. But all you could hear was the whole place shouting, "Rory, Rory, Rory." And he walked into the gig. I was behind him. I carried the Strat for him. Went in, took off his coat, took off his jacket, the check shirt and the jeans, put on the Strat, walked out on stage and just said into the mic, "Let's go to work." And then 1, 2, 3, 4, and just mayhem. He was just a mesmerizing performer. Like,
so no,
like
sound checks or, no messing or no rehearsals, just literally from the car to the stage.
Yeah, exactly. He would go on stage and he would just turn. The band had to work so hard that at one stage I had to drive the drummer to hospital because he had played so hard, the drummer had, that one of the drum fills, the monitors that the drummer uses to hear what he's playing, actually vibrated off its stand and fell on his knee because Rory just he drove the band. Like, the band had to play loud. He didn't use amplification as an excuse, you know, to make himself louder and play easier. Everything was 100 miles an hour and 100% at all times. He was incomparable. That's why so many guitar players have such admiration for him. He was true to the music. He was never a commercial artist. He never sold out, never did ads. He never did the things other similarly iconic guitar players did. He was a true blues man. He never wavered from that road.
It must have been such a privilege to be just have a small part in that story, John.
Yeah, it was one of the proudest times of my life. You know, I spent a long time on the road, a lot of different bands and stuff. But Rory, his first gig was on my 31st birthday, you know, in Switzerland. I remember first gig that I saw him, you know, working. I'd seen him when I was a kid in Listoon Varna. But I was surprised when this gig came up, you know, it was a short, I just got a call and can you do this? And I went down and you know, there he was, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd worked for bands. I wasn't someone that was starstruck easily. But with Rory, it's one of those things when you grow up as a kid, and I played it myself, and then you're faced with this icon that you've always looked up to. It's a moment you never forget.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, we're getting a massive reaction to this. We're getting lots and lots of calls. John, really appreciate you calling. Thank you.
Sure.
Really great to hear that and feel that. I can almost feel it from you, what it would feel like to be on stage, you know, on tour.
He was something else.
Something
yeah,
else.
Never forget him.
Something else. Thanks, John. Can I bring in Eddie now? Eddie, good afternoon.
Hi, Cathy.
Yeah, Eddie, you can take us back to that, as I was calling it already, the origin story of that Fender Strat.
Okay, yes. That was bought about early 60s, 62, yes. 63 maybe. We had the Royal Show Band. Sorry, I was the trumpet player with the Royal Show Band.
Right.
And Jim Conlon, who was the owner of the guitar, Jim Conlon, Tom Dunphy, and myself went to Manny's Music Shop in New York. And Jim heard this guitar being played upstairs. He was immediately gone upstairs. And he came back down to us and said, I'm going to buy this. I'm going to buy one of those. So that was bought in Manny's Music Shop, New York, early 60s. And Jim didn't like the colour of the guitar. That's the reason he sold it.
We heard that it didn't match the...
It was either white or red and white. I cannot remember.
But it didn't.
Yeah,
yeah, it didn't match the. It wasn't the right color for the to match
yeah,
what the band
yeah,
were wearing, basically.
Yeah. yeah. And Tom Dunphy, God rest him. Tom and Jim. Jim is also deceased. Tom bought the first Fender six-string bass guitar that came into the country, came back into Ireland.
Right.
Tom bought the Fender the same day, and I bought a trumpet called the Constellation. Beautiful, big trumpet, bigger than the normal trumpet, but a great sound, a great blast from it.
Anyway,
so there you are.
We should be glad.
Bit of history.
We should be glad that Jim didn't like the colour, because it got us the most incredible collaboration of all time, Rory Gallagher and that Fender.
That will go back to Donegal.
Yeah. Do you think?
Daniel O'Donnell will buy that.
Listen, Daniel, if you're out there, if you have £1 million to spare, give us a call.
If he has £1 million, he has loads of them.
Listen, Eddie, I've got to take a break, but after this, I'm going to talk to somebody who actually played this guitar.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to bring in Paddy Goodwin now. Paddy, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Katie. How are you getting on?
Paddy, you actually played this guitar.
Well, you know, just to put this in context, Katie, we're talking about the state buying this guitar. There is a precedent for this in that there was, through the good offices of Niall Stokes from the Hot Press, there was an exhibition of electric guitars in Collins Barracks National Museum in 2006. And Rory had a number of guitars in that exhibition. And I had one or two guitars in it myself.
Because you collect guitars yourself, Paddy.
I do. Well, I play primarily, but I have a few guitars. And I ended up that when we were taking the guitars out of the exhibition, myself and my great friend Patsy Gallagher, who's a great guitar player from Donegal, both got a chance to play the guitar. Now, we didn't get to plug it in or anything, but we played it as the exhibition was being taken down. And it was remarkable because it was really poignant in that the guitar, I think, possibly still had the strings that he played on it, because the strings were quite rusty in actual fact. And as a guitar, it was very difficult to play. There were very heavy strings. The action, which is the height of the strings from the guitar neck, was very high. I mean, it was clearly set up individually for Rory, and it was really a spiritual experience to be able to play it. It's incredible, absolutely incredible.
And is that the that heavy action that you talk about? That's obviously marries with his style.
Yeah, absolutely. Another great guitar player, Jimmy Smith, who's a friend of mine, who played Rory's guitar at some season. He found it nearly impossible to play because it was set up so high. People like to play a guitar with low action and light strings. Rory was quite the opposite. He was playing high action, very heavy strings, and it was kind of the thing that
was his sound. That's only, how you
only
got
Rory
that sound.
Could play this guitar. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but he got some sound to it.
And I'm trying to picture you, that moment when you basically goes, okay, you're handed the guitar and you're able to put your fingers on it.
That I would have dreamed about, Katie, for years, because I'm originally from Clonus in County Monaghan, and I remember I would go up every Christmas, myself and my friend Hugo Reedy from Clonus, go up from Clonus to see Rory playing in the stadium. He played in the stadium every Christmas, and it was like a pilgrimage. It really was like a pilgrimage for us. And getting my hands on the guitar was like drinking out of the Holy Grail. You know, it was just something else.
Well, that's the language we're hearing about it today, relic, like, you know, like the Book of Kells, or like a religious relic, a secular relic. So what do you think? Do you think it should? The state should step in here, then, Paddy? Do you?
Oh, well, if you look at it, and we can make a significant statement in relation to our own cultural values if we try and bring this guitar home. Why not try and bring it home, and why not set up an exhibition of not just that guitar, but perhaps the rest of Rory's guitars, because they're all sitting in a vault in London. And it would be wonderful if they could be brought back to Ireland. And as I say, there is a precedent for it, because they were exhibited before in Collins Barracks, which would be an ideal place for them.
I was going to say, well, wouldn't that be one venue for sure? The beauty of Collins Barracks, of course, is they're near the train station, so it's accessible for, you know, for visitors to Dublin as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Paddy, thanks for that. Jane, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Thank you for having me on your show.
You're another big fan, Jane.
I am, yes. And I'm very much... I've been listening with interest what the other callers have been saying, but I'm very much foot in the camp of getting that guitar back to Ireland. I think it's vitally important that the guitar is out there for the public. I really am against it going into a private collection. It's just not right that's a possibility that could happen. I can understand where the family are coming from, but please, we have to keep this guitar in the public domain. It's, you know, like Rory, it's part of Irish culture.
You worked in the music industry, did you, back in the day, Jane?
When I was very young, I was about like 18, 19, I worked at Nomi Studios, and Fender had an A&R shop there, and it was headed up by an Irish guy called Tom Nolan. And Donald used to come in to see Tom. I don't know if Rory ever came in when I was on reception. I don't know. I didn't know of Rory at the time, but I made poor Donald endless cups of tea, as you do when you work on reception. And he very graciously always took the cups of tea and drank them. But it was just through Tom that I got to know about Rory, and it just stuck with me. And, you know, a few years later, I thought, I really must seek this guy out and find out what all the fuss was about with him, you know, why Tom was so enthusiastic about him. And it was because of Tom that I then, you know, fell in love with Rory and his music. But that guitar has to stay in Ireland. It has to stay in Ireland.
Yeah, well, that is absolutely the feeling from the wall of calls we're getting in, Jane. Thank you so much for that. As I say, we're just getting so many calls on this. Anna, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie.
Yeah, Anna, you were living in America for a few years?
I was back in the 80s. I was only in my 20s at the time.
Tell us what happened that night in 1985.
Oh, that night. Well, my ex-husband, who I don't know if he's listening or anything, Leamy, was always a great fan, and he had gotten me into Rory Gallagher, but I had never seen him live at the time. And we picked up, I don't know, was it the Irish Echo? You know, you're always looking out for the Irish newspapers, Irish news. And we spotted a small ad to say that, oh, sorry, my dogs are barking out, to say that Rory Gallagher was playing down in Manhattan. I think it was 4th Street and 4th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So we went down that night, nice and early, because we thought it'd be jam-packed. It turned out to be a tiny little pub with a little balcony up at the back, so we put ourselves on the balcony so we'd have a good view. And the pub didn't fill up very much. I was so surprised, disappointed for Rory, mm-hmm. but maybe it just wasn't well advertised. But it worked to my advantage because I ended up dancing right in front of him. You're there, Katie, yeah?
I'm there, yeah, go on, yeah. I'm just imagining you back in 1985 yeah. doing your thing.
Yeah, long hair, pigtails, a lot different to how I look now. And just with my eyes closed, and then I felt something on my left shoulder, and I opened my eyes, and there was Rory Gallagher looking straight at me with the neck of the guitar on my shoulder.
He put the neck of the guitar on your. He put the neck of the guitar on your shoulder as he was playing it.
Yeah, while he was still playing. He was in the middle of a solo, and there was very few of us up dancing in front of him, and I just had my eyes closed, and then I felt this. And I froze for a second, and he just looked at me as if to say, don't panic. And then I just closed my eyes again. And he left the guitar there for the solo. And just smiled at me at the end.
So yeah. He basically perched the guitar on your shoulder while he was playing a solo.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to imagine him in a small venue, because my sense of him is, you know, strutting across the stage.
Yeah, it was an unusual experience. I mean, it's my only time seeing him, and you know, I've seen videos, you know, huge stages in the Cock Opera House, whatever, you know, in Germany, you know, but this was a tiny little pub with a tiny balcony at the back of it. There was people talking, not listening to him. I hate saying that now because. But that's the fact. I was actually greatly taken aback by it. As I said, I think it was just local Americans who maybe didn't know who he was, and it just wasn't advertised out to people who would have gone anywhere to see him, you know. But the crowd were taking very little notice. There was only a handful of us on the floor, and other people were talking, and the pub wasn't even full. And he did look a bit disappointed, I thought, at the start of the gig. But then he just got on with it, being the showman he was. He gave it his all, as he always did.
Okay, and I'd say you've told that story a few times over the years, Anna, have you?
I have, and I've just hoped, I just said to people, you know, I have no evidence. Yeah.
Have you washed the shoulder since?
Well, that, I said that in my text, I have washed. I thought about it for a little while, but, well, I was going to keep the clothes, but I actually didn't.
Right. Anna, thanks so much for calling in with that memory, a great memory to have.
Yeah.
We need to take another break, but after this, we'll see if there's someone that could buy Rory Gallagher's guitar.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I want to bring in Paddy Dunning now. Paddy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Paddy, you're no stranger to acquiring things.
Well, yeah.
Go on, you're of the Wax Museum.
Yeah, well, we run the Irish Rock and Roll Museum. We established it in 2015 with, I suppose, the main support of Philomena Lynott, who donated, you know, a lot of Philip's, her son's, you know, guitars, along with the family helping to support it, and Graham there. And so, you know, it was a great, great foundation for the museum to be established. And it's gone on to, you know, host, you know, thousands of people every year, mm-hmm. to see, you know, guitars, to see all the memorabilia of all of the Irish rock stars that have made such a contribution to Irish heritage, you know, and who are attracting thousands and thousands of visitors to this island.
Okay, Paddy, the big question is, do you have a million quid down the back of the sofa?
No, unfortunately not. And I have to pay tribute to the Rory Gallagher family because they have been brilliant. I mean, they have put items into the museum they not just here, but they've assisted in bringing items all around the world. They've toured, you know, with his guitars. They have shared their time, their stories, his legacy. You know, they've minded his stuff. They've stored it. And it's up to them to do what they wish to do with it, you know. And we have to respect the Gallagher family, their wishes. Now, I haven't heard much from the show. I've just joined a few minutes ago. But, you know, yes, of course it should be, kept in Ireland. You know, and whether it's kept in the Irish Rock and Roll Museum or down in Cork or wherever, I definitely think we should all pull together to try. And I think what we will do, we're going to have a meeting about this now later on or tomorrow morning, to do the GoFundMe, you know, and try collect money, contributions from everybody so that it can be kept in Ireland. Because, I mean, I remember, like, you know, some of the tours that we give every day, one of the stories is about Rory is a journalist, a rock journalist once asked Jimi Hendrix, you know, what's it like being the best guitarist in the world? And he said, well, I don't know, but I'll ask Rory Gallagher. So, you know, Jimi Hendrix, Rory Gallagher was the best guitarist in the world. And, you know, that's been, you know, proven. I mean, you can listen to it. It's an amazing legacy that he has. So he's a true blues rocker. He's inspired so many musicians and guitarists around the world. And, you know, having his guitar in Ireland, it would be a pilgrimage. It would be like a religious, you know, spiritual. It would be a relic. But it's inspiring, you know. And yeah. I definitely think it should be kept in Ireland. And we will try. Actually, something comes to mind here. We had a very, very wealthy visitor to the Irish Rock and Roll Museum here in Temple Bar just about a couple of months ago. And he was doing a big keynote conference he's from the tech world. I won't mention his name, but he's probably one of the wealthiest, in the top wealthiest people in the world.
Okay, you big tease. And he was a
he was a massive, massive fan of Rory Gallagher. Like, he heard that we had a museum. He was doing a show in the Button Factory. He heard that we had a museum in the venue upstairs. He said, can I see what you have of Rory Gallagher? And he came back 3 times that day to just witness what we had there of Rory's, which the Gallagher family had graciously put into the museum. And so we're going to get in contact with him.
All right,
and
okay.
See, would he purchase it at the highest price, of course, and donate it to Ireland?
Well, the key thing there now, Paddy, is maybe he'll purchase it and take it home with him, which is not what we'd want.
He's not that. I don't think he's that type of man. You know, I think he would understand its importance of it being housed in somewhere where somebody can see it, witness it, and, you know, possibly stars could take it out and play.
Paddy, I've so many calls waiting to line up, but that is a very interesting prospect, and I'm utterly intrigued as to who we're talking about there. I might ring you up afterwards to find out. Thanks for that, Paddy. Margaret.
Hello.
Very quickly,
hello.
Margaret. You're a Donegal woman.
I'm a Donegal woman, and the first time I heard Rory was on Radio Caroline playing Messing with the Kid, and I couldn't believe who this guitarist was. Long story short, ended up about a year later, hitched to Dublin with an ex-boyfriend, hitched down just to see Rory, thought he was amazing. But they're talking here about, like, Donegal, this is where the great man was born, in the Rock Hospital in Ballyshannon. And every year, which I must say, Barry O'Neill in Ballyshannon has the best festival, Rory Gallagher Festival, and anybody comes to it every year has a great time. So it would be lovely to see the guitar being, whoever buys it, especially out in Ireland, that it could be displayed in Ballyshannon, because Barry O'Neill has worked so hard, and the gang up there have a very successful festival every year, and everybody should come to it. And you think I'm advertising it here now, but you don't have to advertise Rory Gallagher because it speaks for itself. But it would be lovely for it to come back to Donegal, where he was born, and he loved his family and all that. But Donegal's a great county too, so everybody...
Okay, Mark. You were not letting those Cork people get away with taking Rory off you there, Margaret. I hear what you're saying.
Especially with the little museum there in Ballyshannon too, and it would be a great place just to display it there. And especially, as I said, back again to Barry O'Neill there, like, has worked so hard to have this festival.
Okay, you know, Margaret, I don't want to talk over you, but I have somebody special I want to go to after this and I have to take my last break. But thank you for that. That's the shout out to bring it back to Donegal.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Donal Gallagher, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kat. How are you?
Oh, it's lovely to talk to you, Donal. I don't know if you've been able to hear much of our programme. We are up to our oxters in love for Rory over the last hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, that's great. I just got the bit in. I'm in London at present, so...
Well, I can tell you, we cannot keep the calls. They're just our phones are absolutely hopping with people who are basically talking about Rory's guitar, telling us it is a secular relic. It would be a religious pilgrimage for people if we could have it here somewhere that we could go and see it. I know it was a very difficult decision for you to put it up for sale, Donal. What do you hope happens to it?
Well, ideally, I suppose, whatever the people want for it, if they want, it'd be great to have it displayed in Ireland somewhere. I mean, we have displayed it in plenty of venues in Ireland over the years. It was in the Cork Music Library, which is named after Rory. We did it in Donegal in the Blue Stacks Festival a number of years ago. I don't think too many people knew who Rory was at that point in time. So and the Collins' Barracks in Dublin was part of a larger guitar show. So, yeah, I mean, the difficulty with museums or locations can be that where I have previously donated pieces, you don't know necessarily what becomes of the instruments. I mean, a number of years ago, after Rory died, I was approached by the Parisian Museum, which is for European and Mediterranean civilization. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with the music, but they'd selected Rory because he was from the furthest west in Europe. And this is a brand new museum that was being built in Marseille. So I gave them one of Rory's guitars, which was a present from Fender Guitars. It was a silver one. For their 25th anniversary, and it took years before that museum was built, and then the people I had dealt with and did it through the Irish Embassy all either retired or left. So,
Can I just, because I'm short of time and I'm just really anxious to ask you, like, has there been any approach from any officials? Because we asked the department and they basically said they didn't want to say, they weren't going to say anything that might impact the sale value or outcome of an artefact. Yeah. Has there been any approaches, or would you be open to an approach from?
It's a difficult one. I mean, I've had conversations in the past with a number of places in Ireland, but it takes maybe up to 6 months sometimes to get a reply from people. So, you know, and Rory was global. Ideally, Ireland would be the location, and I can understand that sentiment, but as somebody who's global, it's up to whoever wants to put their shout in.
Yeah, exactly. It's on the market, and as you say, what will be will be.
Well, next year will be Rory's 30th anniversary. So there comes a point in my life, I'm not a guitar player, so I would love it. And it took the decision with the family. You know, my kids didn't really want to have the problem of looking after the instrument or storage of it. Because
it's huge responsibility,
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in America want to have it. It was the last time it was displayed. It was there for nearly 3 years because it got caught up in COVID. So they would like to have it. I mean, as I say, he's somebody who is globally renowned. So, yeah, but it's interesting to hear any approaches from anybody.
Absolutely. We did hear there from Paddy Dunning that he was in talks with a very, very wealthy tech guy who he said he thought might be very interested in it. So, look, the auction is happening one way or another anyway on the 17th of October. Donal, thanks so much for joining us and the very best of luck. And we will, of course, be watching the space. And I suppose we've been talking about it for the last hour and 15 minutes. Before we go, today's on sound today was Paddy Carney, our broadcast coordinator was Shane Galvin, our producer was Dave Sherry. Before we go, we've been talking about all the way through the show. Let's have a listen to that guitar.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.